Today, I am with Felicia, and you have such an interesting story. In fact, when we met briefly earlier in the week and you shared that story with me, I just was so entertained. I mean, it's a difficult story, but at the same time, it's riveting. So can you give us a brief introduction, if you like, who you are and where you're from? But before I say that, the central question or problem for today is this: is good mental health possible if you are unaware that you have a problem? How do we define good mental health? What are some common misconceptions or myths about mental health awareness that prevent people from getting help? So why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got to the point where those questions were poignant for you?
My name is Felicia Smith. I'm fairly new to Minnesota. I've only been here since December 13th, 2022, originally from Ohio. And I had mental health issues, but I didn't know. Mm. And I struggled with that. Mm. I came here to Minnesota after being incarcerated for nearly 5 years because my aunt told me Minnesota has really good mental health services. Mm-hmm. And it would help me with my reentry back into society, being successful and such.
Sure. So tell us about growing up then. If you weren't from Minnesota, I know you'd mentioned your mom and your dad, and that was difficult. And
yes.
Tell us a little bit about that and how you got to the point where life got a little more serious.
So I grew up in what people would call poverty. We didn't know we were poor. It was just the way things were. My mother and father, they struggled. My father was an alcoholic, and a violent alcoholic at that. He broke out windows, tore things up in the house, caused us to run out of the house in the middle of the night. My mother, now that I look back, she had some mental health issues too, but I didn't realize what they were. She was the kind of woman who would get up every morning and drink a beer. That's the first thing she did every morning.
So probably an alcoholic as well.
Yes, but a functioning one. And then she also had a gambling addiction. And growing up, I saw the way we lived, and I said, I don't like it. So I set out to do better. I excelled in school. I graduated in the top 10 of my high school class. I went on to college. Successful there, had internships that took me to New York and Akron, Ohio, outings where I went to Seattle. I was doing so much.
It sounds awesome.
It was a great life. So I was living a good life. I had a full-time job as a sports reporter before I graduated my senior year of college. So I worked full-time, went to school full-time, didn't have a day to myself, and I just lived. I didn't think that my mother or father's issues would come back up in my life, but later on they did, and I didn't realize it. My father passed away in 2022 after my mother had a brain tumor that left her unable to talk and walk, and I came home to take care of her, and then a couple months later my father died, and I didn't deal with that. And those were the beginning steps of my struggle, mental health-wise.
I think it's fairly common that when someone grows up in a difficult situation like that, they see those problems as their problems.
Correct.
Which we're not affected by unless we choose to be, and we choose not to be.
Yes.
And so we're healthy, we're leaving unhealthy people, and we don't realize the impact.
Yeah, you know, it was trauma, and I didn't realize that it would stay with me throughout my life. Even now, you know, I deal with that. In my household, we weren't able to talk about the difficulties or the things going on. Everything was a secret, and so I carried that into my later years. Yeah. When I was struggling, I didn't tell anybody. Mm-hmm. When I had issues, my mother ended up passing in September of 2009 on my grandmother's birthday. So there is another something right. that I have to deal with. I have to try and celebrate my grandmother, but mourn my mother.
Yeah.
On the same day.
Yeah.
And I didn't deal with it. I just closed myself off, and I just tried to get through each day. And people would be like, "Oh, Felicia, you're doing so good. You're handling this magnificent." And I was just, you know, I wasn't handling it. I wasn't dealing.
So then tell us about your on this fabulous job and career
yes.
that you discussed. And you receive information that your mom has gotten cancer and
yeah.
is really struggling. And so you're going to come home and help take care of her.
Yes.
And put that career on hold and tell us what happened after that.
So when my mother was diagnosed with, it was thyroid cancer. And if you have a cancer, it's one of the ones you actually want to get because the survival rate is like 98%. And unfortunately, my mother was not one of those who survived. So I left actually a job down in Louisiana, and I went back to Ohio to take care of my mother. So I was in a good relationship down there. I thought we were headed toward marriage, but I left all that to go back to Ohio to help my mother. And again, leaving a job, leaving a relationship, more trauma, but I didn't deal with it. I just said, I gotta take care of my mother. She took care of me as a kid. I gotta take care of her when she needs it. So the only thing my mother would do to get out of the house was to gamble. So we did it. We would gamble. I eventually took another job in upstate New York, and she would come stay with me for 6 months out of the year. And again, the only thing she would do was gamble, and I would go do it with her. I didn't think that was going to be an issue for me because I took her to get her out of the house. I didn't think it was impacting me.
Right.
But when she passed away, gambling was the only thing she and I really had in common, and so I started doing it. And I started doing it more and more, and it became a focus of my life. It was so much that I worked from 8 a.m. to 4:30. I would wake up at midnight, go gamble from midnight until 7:10, and barely get there for work. And it started taking over my life. And, you know, I was losing money. At the time I had savings, but I was going through it. And eventually I had nothing. And I saw a news story where this guy robbed a bank and he got caught. And he got caught because he had his license plate on the car, on his getaway car. So of course you're gonna get caught. They know who you are. And in my head, I was at a point where I was like, I could do better than that. Yeah. How dumb could he be? I could do it. I could do better than that. And this stayed with me. I didn't realize at that moment that I had OCD and this would stay with me for a year on and on. And you know, it wasn't right. It's not something that a normal person thinks about.
It sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah. often when we have mental health issues, we want to fix our symptoms, or we don't realize it's the gambling that's got to go. We recognize we just need to make whatever we're doing wrong easier.
Yes.
And then the trouble will leave our life. So
exactly.
You just needed money in your mind, not
yes.
to get rid of your addiction.
Yeah, I didn't think I had an addiction. I didn't think I had other mental health issues. I didn't think I had obsessive compulsive disorder. I didn't think I had bipolar. I didn't think I was depressed. I didn't think I had anxiety, but I did. And so, not knowing I had any of that stuff, I was focused on money and just continuing to gamble. And so eventually, I got desperate where I had no money to pay rent. I had no money to make car payments. I had no money to eat, you know. So what did I do? I said, I can do it better than him. So I decided to do it. I decided to go and rob a bank.
Well, you must have felt pretty confident because you've been thinking about it for a year.
Yes.
So you probably spent much time planning. So after a year, you were ready.
I don't know if I was ready because, like I said, I thought about it. I did for a year. And on a Saturday that I was working, I was at work and I said, I'm going to do it today. And so I told my boss that I wanted to leave work early, and I did. I got in my car and I stopped. I had some electrical tape. I put it on my license plate to mask my numbers. And I drove up to another city, another county, and I parked in a shopping lot. And I sat there for a couple hours trying to work up to do it. I kept telling myself, you can do this. You know you're not gonna get caught. All right, you can do this. So I had, you know, you have to pump yourself up like you're in a game or something, like, you know?
Yep.
So I did it. So I went in to this bank. I thought I was gonna do better. I didn't get caught at that time, so I guess I did better, but no. So I go in, I have glasses, you know, I wear glasses and I have a distinct gap in my teeth. So I put some paper over my teeth so they couldn't see my teeth, and I put big sunglasses over my glasses. I had a hoodie on and a hat. And I went in and I guess maybe I was too nice. I said, give me all the money. And the lady looked at me and she said, can I help you? And I said, give me all the money, please. Yes, I use the word please because I am courteous. and so she looks at me, and like I said, she goes, how can I help you? And so I had a knife with me. My intention was never to hurt anyone. I had made sure before I actually went into the bank that there was no one else there because I didn't want to scare anybody unnecessarily. And I knew I would scare the worker, but it had to happen because I needed to get the money. So I pulled out the knife and I set it on the counter. I didn't point it at her. I didn't tell her I was going to hurt her or anything. And I said, please give me all the money. And so this time she did. So I put my Walmart shopping bag, the plastic one that they give you, up on the counter. She put some money in and I turn to leave and I drop all the money. It just goes everywhere. You know, oh my gosh. How bad can you get at robbing a bank, right? So I have to lean down and I'm trying to scoop up the money and I'm trying to do it fast because of course the police are on their way. And I'm scooping and I throw some in, I have to leave some, and I get out and I get in my car and I go and I stop at a apartment building. I count the money. It's less than $1,000. Less than $1,000. I just robbed the bank and I got less than $1,000.
It sounds also like you kind of traumatized yourself with the whole situation.
Yes.
Of, you know, dropping things and rushing out of there and the fear that the police are coming. And you can tell me if this isn't the case, but it sounds like the past year and even maybe years before it, you're really in an escape from trauma mentality. And so you told me earlier when we had a meeting about today that you later on during that day just went and did something with family as if nothing had ever happened.
I did. You know, it was the day that I did it. I sort of planned it because it was Christmas Eve. Mm-hmm. And I know that they should have had a lot of money on hand and that there wouldn't be very many cops on patrol because it was close to a holiday and people take the holidays off. So I, like I said, I counted the money. I took the electrical tape off my license plate and I drove to my sister's house where I picked up my little nephew and we went to a football game. Mm. And on the way to the football game, guess what I did? I stopped and got gas. I took the hoodie and the knife and I put it in a gas station trash can so it wouldn't be found. And we went and watched the football game and it was the only game that the Cleveland Browns won that year. So there was a good memory to it, you know. Yeah. I was awful at the bank robbery, but there was a memory. And then, you know, after you do something like that, you stress about it. You're constantly thinking, am I going to get caught? Did they know me? My grandmother actually saw the bank robbery on the news, and I was sitting there with her. Can you imagine that?
And so did they have footage from like the CCTV cameras where you're in the bank?
Yes, yes. And my grandma couldn't tell it was me. So, but I'm sitting there going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, grandma's gonna know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this, you know, that's additional stress, additional, you know, strain on me, things that this is all building up.
So what did you do next? This wasn't the only bank that you robbed. This was the first of several. So
yes, it was.
What led you to be brave enough to keep moving forward, and what did that feel like?
Well, between the first bank robbery and the second, I got to a point where I didn't want to live. I had been considered, had those thoughts previously, but after robbing that bank, you know, the thoughts invaded me more, but I kept gambling. And so the next time I got paid, once again, I went and gambled away all my money. And on the way home, it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, there was a semi on the wrong side of the road, and I was driving toward it, and I just wanted to die. I didn't want to live. Why would I want to live? I have no money. I can't take care of myself. I'm struggling with life. The relationship I had been in had ended. I was living with my sister because I had lost my apartment. I had nothing. I couldn't make my car payment. I was at the end. I was at the end of my rope, so I wanted to kill myself. So I started driving toward the semi. I switched lanes so I could be in the same lane as the semi that was on the wrong side of the road, and I was just gonna kill myself. And I'm driving toward that semi, and he starts beeping, and I just swerve over. And I don't go to my sister's where I have been staying. I drive around all night. Part of me is like, maybe I could rob a Subway. Maybe I could rob this store. Maybe I could rob, there's these thoughts in my head. This isn't normal. This is not normal. Yeah. And so that morning I ran out of gas because I was driving and I didn't have a dollar to my name. And a stranger actually brought me, I ran out in the middle of a street, and a stranger across from a gas station brought me some gas. And so after that, I drove straight to the hospital and I told them that I needed help because I wanted to kill myself. And so they put me, they sent me to a mental health facility in Willoughby, Ohio. And I was there for about 3 weeks. And there I was diagnosed with multiple things.
Were you surprised by those diagnoses?
I was. They diagnosed me with depression, anxiety, gambling addiction, bipolar, obsessive compulsive disorder. It just wasn't one thing that I was dealing with. It was multiple things. And I had no clue. And they actually wanted to do the CTE where they electric shock you. They wanted to do that to me because they said I was in such bad condition mentally.
And you told me then that you stayed the 3 weeks, but you didn't stay, I think, as long as you would have liked.
So what happened, they actually didn't want me to leave after the 3 weeks, but I felt I was doing better. They put me on medication. I wasn't thinking about gambling or anything, and I thought I was doing okay. So they let me go home, but I was in an outpatient program, so I had to go 5 days a week. And I was doing good. I wasn't thinking about gambling or anything. And insurance said, okay, 4 weeks is enough of outpatient therapy. You're done. And it was a mindfulness therapy, and I had never done mindfulness before. And it was seemed to be working for me. And so they told me I was done. I was still off work. I had, mental health, so was able to take the time off my job. And like that same weekend, I had money. I went and gambled it away. And then what did I do? I didn't have any more money, so I had to rob another bank. This time I did better. I did better this time though. I did. I went in and I said, give me all the money, please. And the girl at the counter was scared. I had a knife and I pointed it down into this reusable grocery bag. And the girl at the counter, she starts throwing money in, and then she stops and I'm like, give me more. And so she puts more money in. And I leave and I go get the car washed. Who does this? Who goes and robs a bank and then goes to a car wash? Me. So I go to the car wash. I'm counting the money while I'm in the car wash. $7,000. And then I do it two more times. Yeah.
Did you go through the money fairly quickly then with your gambling addiction?
I did. I would just go and gamble it all away.
Yeah, and so, you know, thinking about the time between when you first realized there's mental health issues here until you are where you are today.
Yes.
Where you understand it takes more than 3 weeks inpatient and 4 weeks outpatient and you're doing well. There's a lot of learning to be involved there through experience. I'm thinking, did people give up on you?
No, and that was important because eventually, the fifth time I thought I was gonna rob a bank, I got caught. And I was arrested. I was incarcerated for 90 days. My aunt, my sister, they were there for me. Those are the two people who were there for me the most. They had to let me go after the 90 days because the fifth time I didn't actually rob a bank. I went in and I was gonna do it. Something in my head told me not to and I walked out. But the bank teller said I was suspicious. They called the police. The police found me. I had a false plate on the car. It wasn't my vehicle. It was my nephew's. And I had a note in my purse saying that this is a bank robbery. Give me up. Well, it actually said, be cool. This is a bank robbery. And then they had some other stuff telling them that it wasn't their money and that I was not going to hurt anybody.
So you were in the bank for about 10 seconds.
You
yes. don't have a good feeling. So you leave,
yes.
you drive away, but they had thought you were suspicious.
Yeah, and I probably would have thought I was suspicious too. And so, yes, yeah, so they called the police. I was arrested. During that time, while I was incarcerated for those 90 days, I spent most of my time alone because I was suicidal. I didn't eat for 12 days or drink anything for 4 days. On the phone call, I don't remember a lot of it, but I read transcripts of that phone call later. I told my aunt, I'm not a good person. I want to die. I'm going to kill myself.
It's so interesting that you say while you were in prison, you stopped eating and stopped drinking fluids. As you know, I was incarcerated, and that
yes.
began by being arrested and spending time in jail first. And for the first couple of weeks, I said it was an intentional fast.
Really?
And didn't eat for, I think it was at least 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But truthfully, I wasn't interested in any type of health fast or religious fast. I felt probably like you did.
Yes.
And I was just naming it because the jail was going to force me to eat if I didn't have a good reason to starve myself.
Wow.
And so to get them off my back, I said that. But I didn't realize how common that experience can be.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they didn't force me to eat, but they sent me to another mental health facility. And there was the first time I actually had counseling. I was able to speak to somebody about what was in my head and my childhood. Because remember, I was hiding all this. Nobody knew any of this stuff that I've been through. Nobody knew what was going through my head.
Yeah.
And that was the really first time that I felt that I was talking to someone I could open up to and share my experience and sort of understand my mental health. And so after those 90 days, they had to let me go because I didn't do anything. There was nothing they could charge me with because I truly didn't do anything. But during that time I was incarcerated, the FBI came and they said, we believe you've been involved in 4 other bank robberies. And they had pictures and they were like, is this you? Is this you? We have your phone. And I was like, yeah. And they were like, okay. You know, I gave them the passcode to my phone and with that triangular electronic data, they could see where I was at and I was at the locations of the bank robbery, but they still had to do an investigation. So, I believe I got out of, jail in September of 2017. And it took them until November of 2018 before they arrested me and indicted me on federal charges.
What did that tension feel like? Waiting for the shoe to drop, knowing you're being investigated,
yes.
and you've already spent 90 days in jail, which you did not enjoy.
No. So when I got out, I told my sister, I said, it's not over. And she was like, what? You didn't do anything. I said, I'm going to be going to jail. I'm going to go to prison. I was like, it's going to happen. When, I don't know, but I'm not going to tell you anything so that you can't testify against me or anything. I said, don't ask me any questions. And so I knew at this point, I knew I had mental health issues and I wanted to address them. So I sought out a counselor, a therapist, and it took me 5 people before I found one I felt comfortable with. I think a lot of time people think that they have to go to the first person, that they have to stay with the first person they see. You don't, and you shouldn't. You need to find somebody that you feel comfortable with sharing any and everything with. And it took me 5 people before I did that. And once I found Kim, I went every week, not every other week or once a month. Every week I went in to see her, every single week.
And you mentioned to me as well that something you do now that is very helpful for you that you didn't do before is be transparent.
Yes. Keeping secrets isn't good for anybody. I didn't know that. I thought that was normal. I thought everybody had all this stuff and they didn't share. But now I talk about everything. You know, I don't hide that I've been incarcerated. I tell people when I meet people, if I'm at an organization and they're like, oh, well, why did you come to Minnesota? I let them know about my background, that I was incarcerated. Once I was indicted and incarcerated, I spent a couple years in county jail because of COVID. I was in a cell by myself for 20 out of 24 hours a day, which isn't healthy either. And when you're in a county facility, you don't get counseling. They will give you medication, and I was medicated up really, really well. And I slept those first 2 years away. I don't know too much that happened. My aunt, she sent me books, and I read those books, but that's a lot of time to lose. Mm-hmm. And I lost that time because of my own actions and not getting the help I needed before it got so bad.
So then you received counseling after COVID was over and you were in a regular prison?
Not really. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, excuse me, people think that people who are in prison are getting all this rehabilitation. So incorrect. I was in 6 different facilities, and at the last facility I was at in Waseca, Minnesota, I started being part of a CTP program. It's a behavioral health program, and I think I went to it maybe 3 or 4 times, and it was a group setting, and I still struggled with being in a group setting and sharing everything. I still struggled with that because these are people that you're going to see every day, and this is in prison, and if you share something, guess what? They're going to talk about it to other people. And I was still struggling with that. And so it's when I was released, part of my probation was that I have to continue on my medication and I have to have counseling. And so today I still receive counseling, but I'm open. I talk with my friends, my family about how I feel and what I'm going through. When I'm not in a good situation, I don't hide it anymore.
I am curious. You're talking about the initial time you went to the hospital and you were released and it wasn't a long enough treatment, so you went back to bank robbery, and now you've had more experiences with counseling. What was the difference this time, do you think, for you, that kept you from relapsing?
The difference this time is that, one, I am on medication. 2, I realize that I'm not perfect, and not being perfect and asking for help is important and essential. 3, I have support because I am being open and honest about what I'm going through. I have people who will support me. If I'm struggling, I have people I can talk to about it. And, you know, a change of scenery, because the triggers were in Ohio for me. You know, do they disappear? No. Everything, all the trauma, everything I went through is still with me. But while I was incarcerated my last 2 years, I sort of woke up and realized that, hey, while I was in there, that people needed help. And so I started filing grievances, helping people write to their judges to get out of have their First Step Act credits added up. And I realized, oh my gosh, I have a purpose. I did not have a purpose in life when I look back during that time where I was robbing banks and things. I had no purpose.
So
and
you
today
were,
I have a purpose.
You were fairly aimless then.
Yes.
You had a career.
I had a career.
And you had family. And many of people think this is important components of life. But if you don't understand your meaning and your purpose, and
yes.
It sounds like that understanding, which came with helping people
yes.
through that purpose
yes.
and receiving that feedback, is a big change.
Yeah, it's huge. You know, when my mother was alive and I was helping her, that was my purpose, to help my mother, to care for my mother, to get her through her final years. When she passed away, I had no purpose. I didn't have children. I was in a relationship. It wasn't a great relationship. I was working for the state of Ohio. My job, I was actually a driver's license examiner at that point. but my job was, I didn't think at my job. I just got in a car, told people to go left, right, straight. You passed your test, here's your license. So I didn't have nothing. I wasn't using my mind. I wasn't helping anyone. I was aimless, and I didn't realize that. And, you know, did I ever want to be incarcerated? Absolutely not. But being there helped me get here to a better place.
So that leads me to my next question. Looking back at all of this, what do you think it has done in affecting you and the person you are today? What's your attitude looking back towards what you went through? You said you wouldn't change it because it has benefited you in the long run.
Yes.
The trials and tribulations make us stronger.
They do.
However, I'm curious, how would you describe how you've changed and how it's affected you overall?
Well, my sister is like, she tells me, she's like, you've changed. Before, I was judgmental. I was a very judgmental person. Oh, they went to jail? I don't want to have anything to do with them. They're a bad person. Well, I learned while I was incarcerated that everybody makes mistakes. That I can't, who am I to judge other people? You know, I believe in the Bible it says not to judge. And I was very judgmental. And today I'm not. I just take people for what they show me. I don't think about their past. I don't think about their future. I look at the here and now. When I got out of prison, I came back, and unfortunately my aunt had stage 4 cancer, but I helped her, and I had to get a job because that was part of my probation. So I applied for one job, and it was with a nonprofit, helping people, because that's what I need to do. I need to help people.
And so, you know, I like that you said all of these things describe you being better at relationships.
Yes.
With your family, with yes. the people you were incarcerated with, and your lack of judgment now, I would say lack of condemnation over others in their situation,
yes.
allows you to be more available
yes.
and more approachable.
Yes.
I think is very important. And if you want to help people, you have to be approachable. You can't be, I didn't know that growing up, and I did what you did. I kept secrets. I tried to pretend everything was fine, and nobody can relate to that because no one else is fine every single day.
That's correct.
And so then what are they going to talk to you about? They don't want to look like they're not fine when you're so fine.
Yes.
And so I do want to talk a little bit, since, you know, From Surviving to Living is a faith-based podcast, and I want to really help people that the Bible, I did not know this. I suffered from clinical depression
yes.
for decades, and really compartmentalized that God is in charge of what you do at church, and that's how you behave, but my mind, well, that's got to be something entirely separate that God doesn't know anything about. And I don't know why I made that distinction, except for my depression felt so permanent.
Yeah.
And so impossible to get better. And I tried everything, books, medicine, counseling, and just wasn't getting better. And when I actually started reading the Bible, I was shocked by all these verses that talk about the heart and the mind. And so I'm just gonna share a couple of them. When I first read this in the book of Jeremiah, I didn't think it applied to me, but it doesn't have any qualifiers. And it says, the heart is deceitful above all things. And the heart, it's referring to the seat of emotions, not our physical heart. And it is exceedingly perverse and corrupt and severely mortally sick. Who can know it? Who can perceive, understand, and be acquainted with his own heart and mind? And that's what we're talking about here when someone has mental health issues and they don't even know it. After we talked, I thought about, we can have a physical illness and not know it at first. You can go months or even years with a cancer and put off the symptoms to something else and not the true cause in the illness. I believe the same is true with mental health. Yes. You can suffer for years and you put the symptoms off to something else and have no idea something's wrong. And this talks about this right here. And there are so many verses about how God heals and transforms. But in Romans 12, verse 2, it says, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the entire renewal of your mind with its new ideals and its new attitude, so that you may prove for yourselves what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God." And I like how it says, prove for yourselves. Right? Know it for yourselves what good mental health is, what healthiness is. And then finally, you talked about having purpose and helping others and finding meaning in that. And I just, as we were talking, I had looked up one other verse because it's important that the Bible tells us mental illness is real and you might not know it. It also tells us how to get better. The entire renewal of your mind, new ideas, new attitudes, so you can prove for yourselves what is good. But finally, why? In Ephesians 2 says, "For we are God's own handiwork, his workmanship, recreated," and that's the renewal of the mind, "recreated in Christ Jesus that we may do those good works which God planned beforehand for us, taking paths which he prearranged ahead of time that we can walk in them and have a good life." And so all of those things are there, and it sounds like your life really holistically shadows all of that in your journey.
Yes.
And so I am so glad you shared this with me. I just want to finish by saying so much of what you said, I found my own journey paralleled, even though I'm not a bank robber, my crime is different, but the time in prison, the time in jail, helping others and finding meaning,
yes,
is so important. And also not judging others. I was very judgmental.
Me too.
Before I went to prison, and I find now I'm much more open, and that makes me relatable with better relationships as well. So I hope you will come back at some point in the future. I am certain that what you are doing now, you will have good stories to share about helping others and our listeners and viewers on their journey. So
thank you so much for allowing me to share and with your viewers and listeners, and I definitely hope I can come back again.
Yeah, it's a great story. So wonderful. So thank you.
Thank you, Holly.
All right, so this is the end of the show. Thank you, everybody, for watching. You can see more great episodes like this one at my website, hollybott.me, and I hope I'll see you there. Thank you.
Look for more episodes that inspire at hollybott.me. Until next time, remember, your story is never over. God's grace is always waiting to rewrite it. This is From Surviving to Living.